I don't think it's going to stop. I think that, you know, the fact that it became a good, you know, financial market for people just kind of helped them do what they kind of wanted to do already back in the day. So I don't see that slowing down a whole lot.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm
Grace. And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Expert Corner interviews. Every Friday, we bring in short-term rental investors or experts in the industry. And today, I'm really excited about the conversation we're about to have. I've invited Mr. Paul Walschmidt from OwnerRes, CEO, co-founder of OwnerRes, to join us and talk about the vacation rental industry, all the changes. And Paul, I was telling you before we hit record, I'm really excited about this conversation because it's not too often that I get to talk to somebody that's been in the short-term rental game for two decades like I have. Whenever I tell somebody about my first short-term rental in 2006, they're like, man, it's been a long time ago. But you're right in that same boat.
Yeah, first, good to see you again, Sean. But I kind of, when I'm talking to people, you kind of get a sense of how new they are based on when you start talking, you start hearing the war stories before Airbnb, or, you know, if they right. were check based back in the day, or if it's, you know, they've been doing this a while, but then you realize, okay, it's been 4 or 5 years for them, not 20.
Yeah.
So yeah, same likewise.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, I'd love to hear the backstory. Like, cause back then, you know, short-term rentals nowadays are very mainstream. Back then it was, I got into it kind of by accident, to be honest. And kind of stumbled upon it, but I'd love to hear your path into vacation rentals, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah. So the quick story is, it was very much the cabin on the river experience. It was, my wife and I wanting to kind of, invest in something that we had stayed at. And so back in that same time period, not quite, 2006, more like 2008. Mm-hmm. But we stayed someplace. We really fell in love with it. Wanted to, you know, have that same experience on a regular basis, but also, we thought it'd be a good way to make a little money. So, we got the cabin on the river, literally a cabin on the river. And then, it one led to another. And, you know, it was a good way to kind of lose some money in terms of renovation and depreciation, and, started making a lot too, more than we thought it would. And then, so one led to two, led to three, some friends of mine, Chris Hines, Ken Taylor, joined me and, started kind of a small little, management company and investment company. And then very quickly, as a software engineer, I realized the software was either terrible or, you know, non-existent for the small owner operators. There was PM software, and there was bigger stuff, some stuff that had kind of trickled out of the hotel industry, but mm-hmm. nothing really for the small homeowner. There were just obstacles kind of at every turn.
Yeah.
And so I started making some stuff for myself, and then Chris Hines joined me as well. This is between 2009 and 2013 when I was on my own. Chris joined in 2013. We rebranded in that time period. There's some different logos and words out there. But the modern current OwnerRes started in January 2013 with Chris and I. And then it was by no means a you know, success story overnight at that point either. It would take many, many more years, 4 to 5 years, I would say, beyond that, before we kind of figured out pricing and revenue and channel management and the kind of the things we had dreamed about back in 2008, 2009, but weren't possible. You know, HomeAway back in that time was really not playing ball with little, you know, fly by night operators like us. So it would be a lot more years before we kind of knocked down some walls or went around them or went through them and found our way into 2017, 2018, where we started kind of making a name for ourselves. And I think it was in that time period too, where we added kind of our first employee or employee number three, you know, besides Chris and I. And then, but we've stayed the course and we've been bootstrapped ever since and profitable for the last 5 or 6 years straight. And so we're kind of the same operation we were way back in 2008, 2009, envisioning in our head, but now thankfully, you know, the real deal.
That's awesome. And you guys have really grown into really the elite, you know, or you know, if I, you know, use the term a lot, gold standard when it comes to that vacation rental channel manager, property management software tool, you know, the suite of software tools that the owner operator can use to really And like you were kind of mentioning beforehand, it was kind of enterprise level type software available, and it was expensive, and it wasn't really available to the mom and pop investor. And we're in a mom and pop industry, right? This is the, you know, the short term rental industry, you know, is not dominated by a lot of institutional investors and that enterprise level money that's in there. It's a mom and pop industry, and there just wasn't those tools available. And it was awesome to see, you know, you guys within our Vodacy portfolio and within our Vodacy family, a lot of people use a lot of different PMS software tools. You guys are by far and away the leader, at least in our group. And we have a pretty, you know, active investor group, I would say, and you know, opinionated, if they, you know, to say like they're looking for the best tools, and you guys have risen to the top. So it's, you know, it's a testament to being able to, one, be in it for as long as you have been, stay in the course, making sure that we iron out the kinks, we figure out how to bring these types of tools, the enterprise level type tools, to the mom and pop investor. And it's, you know, it's that's what we've watched and seen, at least from, you know, in the last two decades, of really just this rapid growth into, for what was available tool wise, efficiency wise, for the mom and pop investor. And you guys are right in the middle of all that.
Yeah, we really are. That's there were a lot of, I think, times over the years, distractions or forks in the road we could have taken to go toward the enterprise routes or the PMs, the bigger, even hotel chains and things. But we stayed the course, and we kind of had a phrase for a long, long time. It's still around, but it is WWSRD. It's a play on the term WWJD. What would Jesus do? If you remember the bracelets and everything people used to have. The WWSRD is what would Shenrent do? So Shenrent is the company that my wife and I, and then Chris and some of our collective group, kind of started years ago to manage our own properties, and then some other friends of ours and people in our area. Shenrent stands for Shenandoah Rentals. And so over the years, we kind of use that in the software industry, there's a term known as dog fooding. So we would dog food off of that company, and we just kind of stayed true to what the small mom and pops wanted. And really, Airbnb from probably 2012 forward kind of pushed what I felt was coming in 2008, 2009, which is that as automations increased, as technology brought automation, you would have more and more people kind of stepping away from the larger PMs and going on their own. So you'd have, you know, mom and pops would, you know, even more so start developing out of the world of PM and professional management. To some extent, it's kind of become a hybrid with co-hosting, but you saw Airbnb also push a big wave of this too. So because what used to be send your check to the lodging company in town who's managing everything, and they do far more than that. They may do cleaning and whatever else, but with the advent of Airbnb and some of the merchant of record channels, Vrbo joining that, I think there was a big wave that just started really pushing. Not only is this a good investment strategy and something that a lot of people can get into, but even some of the people who had rentals with a property manager in the past, we've seen a lot of split off from that. And so we've had, you know, just waves and waves of people come our way because of that. So it's kind of there's a historical effect, some of it's a tooling and technology effect, but it's the mom and pops are very empowered now. So it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, because I don't think that, you know, as mainstream as short-term rentals have become as an investment asset class, I don't think that they're unique enough. And like where it's difficult to scale them, and when you know, it's hard to place. Like, I have private equity firms call us on a regular basis saying, hey, listen, family office just called me. We're trying to place $50 million. And we want to buy, you know, we want to look at some of these short-term rentals. And it's like, well, it's hard to place $50 million in short-term rentals because you got to go buy all these little homes, right? And, you know, and some of them are very nice, bigger homes, but they're still, it's not that type of a game, right? And especially at the top of the market where these properties succeed, they're very unique properties, unique experiences, and not necessarily, you know, the cut out for the big enterprise money to come in. So it was really important for this industry and I think it was a huge catalyst for this industry to grow to where it has, to be able to have these tools available for mom and pop investors where they didn't have to go invest in those enterprise level property management tools.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all kind of come along for the ride. So I think regulations have changed. You talked about a little bit about, you know, things getting more automated. I mean, there's been a kind of a wave of things coming along that has helped mom and pops. And then you've seen some of the industry and the, you know, municipalities around the industry start to change its noise and its reaction to those cycles.
Yep.
But yeah, it's it's good. And I think we're also coming out of some of that too, coming out, we're riding that cycle. We're kind of coming around to the other side, but it is a difficult thing to balance. And I'm glad you kind of pointed that out, that the private equity money, which we see in software all the time, people knock at our door, but it's easy to lose $50 million on a software company that's doing well. It's or maybe two or three software companies that are doing well or whatever. It is very difficult for small mom and pop businesses. And I always kind of wonder how often people are able to get past that investment scaling question in STRs and come out the other end with something they actually want because of the size it is and where the money, where they want the money to be, where investors want the money to be. You know, there's this kind of this balancing act, this difficulty between, you know, why you got into vacation rentals and STRs to begin with, you know, the hospitality, the unique touch, the warmth of the property. You know, a lot of my wife talks all the time about, you know, how well properties do where owners stay there on a regular basis versus where owners do not stay there. And it's kind of just this portfolio of units by a professional manager. Yep. We all see that. The balancing act of that and how you do that with a larger and larger portfolio versus just getting into like a boutique motel, hotel type business, which is more scalable, but then, you know, has the maybe doesn't have the space and the accommodation, the hospitality and feel of the smaller unit. So it is interesting to watch all that.
Yeah, it's like we always, the book I wrote is called What the Hell is a Lifestyle Asset, because I'm a big believer in like we want to maximize smaller portfolios. Like we're looking at saying, hey, listen, and our whole philosophy is this space has become very, very popular for the end consumer because of the uniqueness, because of the warmth, because of the, you know, the hospitality side of it, right? These unique experiences. And we always say we buy properties and portfolios that we use personally. And it's important. And I always tell people, you don't realize how important that is to your performance. And so to hang on what your wife has been saying, we believe that 100%. I always say, you know, because if I enjoy my property and I set it up to where it's a great experience for me, somebody else is going to have that same experience. If I'm just buying it as an investment, I'm never going to visit it. I'm just going to build this portfolio because I like the asset class. It's going to come across to sterile and cold, and somebody is probably not going to be as attracted to it because I never even stayed there, or I'm going after a target audience that maybe I don't even understand, right? And so I think it's really important to be able to do that. And then also the flip side of that coin is the consumer has very high expectations of how this is delivered, how it's communicated, right? It's like, hey, I want this 5-star guest experience, not just from this like cool little cabin in the woods, but I expect you to operate like a real operator, right? And so, and that's where you guys are coming in and helping owners really figure out how to automate, you know, what are the things that we can do to make our lives easier, but not only our lives easier, how can I make it easier and safer for the guest as well? And where they feel like they've got this 24/7 concierge, they've got a really kind of professional host that, because they're judging us on a whole bunch of different levels, right? And one of them now is the expectation is we better have a 5-star experience all the way across the board. And that comes down to our operations as well.
Yeah, it does. I wonder also how many people, it's hard. We do a lot of data, a lot of measurement in-house, and we have a data analyst guy, and we own a lot of data and do a lot of stuff with it. And I always kind of wonder, there's some things you can't measure very well. One of those is how many people got into it for love of the game, for that cabin on the river. I stay here myself, and then have 3-4 and kind of lost that touch. And, you know, how do they see the difference between that first one they were passionate about, maybe still are, maybe still go to the first one or the first two, and then downstream 5-6, you know, later, what's the difference? And how could you measure satisfaction? How can you measure revenue, reviews, reputation? So one of the things that we've tried to do, we're big on, you know, being very robust as a package, being fast, working really well. But the problem really is, you know, transparency and how you expose that robustness, that technology, because what one person may find to be a very intriguing wall of dials and toggles and settings, someone else looks at it and they just, you know, it's TMI. They just can't, they can't deal with it. They can't digest it. So, this is where AI shines really well. And, you know, everybody in our industry is clamoring really quickly to staple on some sort of AI package or AI thing. But, one of the things we're trying to do is expose both on the messaging and task management side, but also on the quality side, whether or not your quality is what it was in years past based on language, based on reviews. When I say language, I mean like messaging with guests in the past, across properties, so that as you go from 3 to 5 to 20 to 100, you can see where you're dropping the ball or where it feels like, you know, there's more neutral sentiment versus happy or really, really positive sentiment. And it's difficult because it's just, you know, the nature of AI trying to figure out what, you know, where there's satisfaction or where there's happiness versus not. You know, you're very limited based on how much you interact with the guest or the traveler in any particular stay. But this is where I think AI and some of the automation in the future is really going to shine. Being able to, for that owner or that PM that really wants to kind of look deeply into their system and balance trying to get scale, trying to be bigger, but at the same time, trying to keep that warm touch, being able to really pinpoint, okay, you know, I can clearly see over here, we have an issue, or there's a tone, or there's a reputational problem starting to happen that things like reviews really can't do. But detecting tone, detecting things that might be kind of papered over on a regular basis between a cleaner and, you know, an owner, or a cleaner and a guest, or owner and a guest, you know, it has the ability to do that. So looking forward, I'm optimistic about where that's going, because I think there is this balancing thing that's just, you know, been a struggle the last few years as people try and scale and, you know, want to be this bigger business, but at the same time, you know, this is a business that was born on hospitality and side gig and things that are kind of inherently difficult to scale.
That's so interesting to me. And I love that you, like hearing the direction you guys are heading and trying to judge that, because it's really now you're saying, hey, listen, we're trying to figure out, because I'm a huge believer that it is like the top properties are the ones that really are dialing in that hospitality feel, like, are we a really good host? Are we delivering these amazing immersive experiences for our guests? Do we really care? Do they feel like we care? And what we feel like is what we're starting to see is there's a pretty good delta between those middle of the road properties and the top properties in almost any market and any size of property. It's not just going and saying the biggest and best properties are making all the money. I'm saying like you have one bedrooms that are competing with other one bedrooms, and the top one bedrooms are, there's a huge delta between the money they make and the middle to the bottom of the market. Right. And it does come down to, in my opinion, those things that you just mentioned. And so, you know, I feel like a lot of people, when they're looking at these software solutions and automations and communication, all that stuff is great, right? But I love that you're taking it to the next step of saying, hey, how can we judge whether you're slipping as a host? How can we judge? Because like we always, when we're looking for some of the hosts that we work with, co-hosts and some of those people, like I'm looking, how many times does the guest mention their name in the reviews? Like, don't tell me about the house. Like, you'll notice the top properties, the host is mentioned by name. You know, probably 70% of the reviews mentions the host by name, right? Things that, those are the things you're talking about tracking, that is like, okay, that's an indicator. Now, what if now you're only getting mentioned 3 out of 10? You're like, hey, you're starting to slip, right? There's something wrong here, because because that's a huge part of that experience for the guest is the communication and the host experience, right? And the host interaction. And you see it across the board in reviews. And to your point, it comes down to what are the things we're looking at to really raise the bar. And not only, I mean, that gives the better guest experience, but that also puts a lot more money in our pocket, right? As the host.
Yeah, it does. And you have to push for those interactions. Yeah. It's one of the things we've noticed. We mentioned earlier, we own a lot of data. That's a term that we use, from CRM and sales. I'm talking on the owner's side now, through, you know, ticketing, help desk, you know, webinars, in-person at conferences. So we own tons and tons of data. We try to analyze it. What you realize is the more you push for interaction, the more you can measure, the more you can discover. You might think, well, you know, no one says anything at my property this weekend, then all is well, right? No news is good news. And that might be the case if it's, you know, July 4th and you don't want to deal with it. But you don't learn very much. And a lot of times you have people who are just tolerant or kind of jaded and don't, you know, they just don't say anything, not because they're happy or satisfied or even neutral. It might be negative or even angry, but they don't say anything. So pushing for interaction is important as well. And that this is all the ways in which you have to look at how do you get your fingers into the data? How do you pull more data? You don't want to irritate the guest. But pushing for interaction really tells you a lot. I thought of that for a couple of reasons, but one of which is you're talking about, you know, talking about the host's name or saying the host's name. Dale or Brad was, you know, like talking to him again or seeing him or whatever. He was mowing the yard for us because there was a problem or whatever. That is, you know, somebody who has a conversation and knows their host, and there's an experience and there's a relationship going on. And so you want to push for those things as much as possible. One of the things that Onerez does really well, it was kind of what was kind of a sneaky good benefit to all of these things, kind of just came in and has threads to all these aspects, even AI, is the auto 5-star review feature, which we're not the only ones who do this, but it was kind of eye-opening when we started this, which is if there are not indicators on the booking, like you had to keep some part of the security deposit or there was a certain tag in place or whatever, and you don't know a reason why it's a bad stay, then automatically after a certain period of time after the departure, leave a 5-star review automatically. The system will for you. It'll randomize, use a template on your behalf. The AI can even write one. And this is because, as you know, when you do that, it pushes the guest to leave a review because of how it's exposed on the channel. And so that alone led to a huge increase in a number of things. It led an increase to AI discovering sentiment scores or grading sentiment scores. Like, okay, now we can actually see what's going on and tie together something that they mentioned earlier that we didn't quite understand, or that was kind of an offhand comment, throwaway comment with something that was said later in the review. But it also pushed those who started using it significantly higher in terms of review scores. People who were struggling to get back to Superhost went to Superhost in one quarter or one half. So little things like that, pushing for interaction or, you know, using software to kind of reach out and be dynamic as opposed to just this big screen of settings that if you know how to flip toggles and use are good. You know, there's a balancing point in there too for us. We're really trying to push to get to, like you said, those things where you can see, oh, these listings, these owners are really talking to their guests and you're getting these interaction points that are leading to some positive outcome.
Right. And it's, I always say it is like you're saying, you have to spur those conversations. You have to be very intentional about making sure those interactions take place. And it's just like everything else. Like when you're trying to get somebody to book your property, you don't keep sending them, you know, here's 15% off, book my property. Hey, I'm having a Black Friday sale, book my property. Hey, I'm doing this. It's almost Christmas, book my property. You know, you're providing value. You're giving advice. You're asking questions. Do you need help? Do you need this? Like all those different things. And it starts to encourage those interactions. I wrote in my book back in What the Hell is Lifestyle, I said, you just mentioned exactly what we do for reviews. We consistently get reviews from 90% of our guests. The industry average, I think, is like 10 or 15%. And it's almost exactly what you're talking about with your guys' auto 5-star. We go out and say, hey, listen, we give a 5-star review and then we reach out to them and say, Paul, you were an amazing guest. We know how important reviews are. We just left you a 5-star review. You were awesome. We'd love to have you back. I just posted that review on your profile in Airbnb. And then we send it. I don't ask for a review. I don't ask for 5 stars back. And then usually 10 minutes later, we're saying, hey, by the way, if you had a great stay as well, those reviews are important to us. And so if you wouldn't mind leaving us one, we'd sure appreciate it. But that law of reciprocity kicks in, right? They're like, hey, listen, that was nice of Sean. And they go read the review and they see what we said. And it was really nice. And we're like, oh man, I'm going to go say something nice about Sean too. And you get reviews that you might not have otherwise got. And it's worked for us for a long time. Now you've got tools that are available to, you don't even have to think about doing it. Like, it's like, hey, listen, we're going to still send it out. As long as there's not an indication why we shouldn't send it out, we're going to send those 5-star reviews out. People ask me that all the time. They're like, what if they weren't, you know, what if you don't know? Or I'm like, you know, err on the side of giving them a 5-star review because you want one back, right? Most of your guests are really good. Most people, you know, you hear of horror stories, and those things are the minority of what happens in our business. It's not the majority. And so, you know, benefit of the doubt, give them a 5-star review unless you know they were just horrible in some way.
Yeah, you're pushing for an overall examination of your business. You're pushing for information, even negative information. You want to know. Yeah. You're pushing for lots of things that Superhost macro kind of understanding that the math is in your favor. Assuming you have a good property and you try, the math is in your favor. You will get more 5 stars than 4 or 3 or 2. Yep. So you will build toward what you want. It's kind of like I forget who it was, Vrbo or Airbnb sent out a study that a lot of internally in our company, a bunch of people balked at. And then we realized that a whole bunch of people in some of our like community, our users balked at. But it was really interesting. And the group I'm still affiliated with, my wife's company, Shinerite, started doing it. And it was really interesting as a result. And that is adjusting your cancellation policy to be way lighter, to be way more, you know, tolerant, way laxer, I guess I should say. And putting up with some last minute cancellations to gain a lot more time ahead of time booked, including off periods, midweek times, because there's a psychology on the part of the traveler, which is at right at the top, well, I'm going to filter people who have lax cancellation. Oh, this person's moderate. This person is, you know, 7 day or less. This person maybe is even 24 hours. I can cancel at a hotel. And so you gain a lot more of your calendar booked up ahead of time. Again, including the periods that you may not have booked before, midweek and off season. And then the other thing is you start on a really good footing with guests. Yep. You start with from this standpoint of tolerance and acceptance. And I'm like a hotel. I'm not going to sit here and grill you. If you need to cancel 30 days, I'm not going to take. I might keep 50% of it. And I say all that to say, obviously, business models vary. There are properties that are giant and can't book at the last minute. Obviously, you know, mileage varies, all that. But, you know, it's about big picture. It's about, you know, how are you using the data? How are you using tools to empower mom and pops to think more broadly like a business owner instead of that, you know, this is my beach house. Send me a check in the mail. Don't you dare mess up anything. And, you know, I'm gonna be vengeful and pay you. I'm going to get even if something goes wrong. That kind of old school mentality that just doesn't serve anyone well.
No, it doesn't. I love that you brought that up. We talk about it being a mom and pop business, but a lot the drawback of that is a lot of mom and pop, you know, these are expensive properties people are buying. That's, you know, maybe it's their second home and they're super defensive and protective over it. And they think, you know, what I always tell people is business owners, you usually don't make policy decisions on outlier type of results, right? You don't say, well, that might happen, so I'm never going to do this, right? I'm a huge proponent of flexible cancellation policy. We let people cancel up to 3 days before any property they have. I have 10 bedroom properties. They can cancel up to 3 days before. And we've always done it, but it's a great marketing thing. And I'm 100% in agreement with you and believe that it gives that consumer the confidence to say, hey, listen, I don't have to worry so much. If something happens, I can get out of this. Well, guess how often something happens? Not that often. Does it happen once in a while? Where they cancel? Yes. But overall, I believe we get a lot more bookings because we have that flexible cancellation policy. We also allow them, even on big properties, a strict, like we have a 2-night minimum. We never have longer night minimums on even our bigger properties or even on the busier weekends. We want to be as flexible as possible for the consumer, and consumers will naturally book longer stays during the busier times, and they will naturally, you know, they're going to, and if they're looking at two properties, and I always tell people, this is not a game of one silver bullet. It's a game of 100 golden BBs, right? It's all these little teeny things that make a difference in your performance. And if you and I, Paul, have the same property on the same beach and, you know, we're roughly the same bedrooms and both built about the same time, and you know, we're not giving the consumer a whole heck of a lot of reason to differentiate between the houses, and you require, you know, you have a 60-day cancellation policy, or you're going to keep most of the deposit, or they're required the booking, and I have 3 days, you're going to be like, well, I'll just go to Sean's just in case. And that just in case almost doesn't ever happen, right? And so if it does once in a while, maybe, you know, we end up having a cancellation here and there, but we've been doing this for a long time, and we feel like, you know, those are outlier events. And you get that micro commitment of somebody, and a lot of times when they book the property, it's not even a micro commitment, it's a full commitment. And most people, you know, it's why do they think they have you sign when you go in to look at a car and they tell you your price quote and you're like, okay, why don't you sign this? I'm going to take it back to the sales manager. Well, you don't need to sign that. They have you sign it because when we commit to something, is just our human nature is we want to fulfill that commitment, right? And so that's why I always say, I'm like, I'm going to give them, the consumer, every reason to book our property and protect them for every reason if something should happen that they can get out of it, and that something should happen might never happen. And so it's, I totally agree with you. Just wanted to kind of put an exclamation point on that, because that's how we run our business and how we've done it for a long time. And it works out really, really well.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't realize we aligned so much on this, but yeah, it makes sense. I mean, if you're really, using the tools and doing that balancing act to keep, you know, to try and scale, try and build business out of this, try and, you know, think like a business owner, but at the same time, keep the hospitality, the warmth of the small, you know, the reason you started out, the small, you know, side gig, cabin on the river type situation, then this is all stuff that's got to be going through your head.
As you, and forgive me for not knowing this, but you're talking about a lot of, you know, like kind of how do we make business decisions? How do we, you know, put ourselves in a position to, you know, get chosen by the consumer above and beyond everything else? How do we maximize these assets within OwnerRes as a tool? Does it have those types of, does it have, like, cause you're, you know, you say you guys are, you know, you're a data tool. You're looking at data all the time. You guys are, you're analyzing data, trying to make the tool better for the consumer to maximize their asset. Does it give me that kind of insight inside of OwnerRes on some of those suggestions because based on that data you're finding out?
It does. I wouldn't say we're, you know, purpose, you know, like an analytic tool or that's purpose built around, you know, things like RevPAR and things that are like where you're doing a deep dive into some of that. We have a lot of partners, you know, your key datas and such that we integrate with. We do have a reporting suite that's pretty good, but most of our stuff are for the power user. When it comes to that end of things, it's for the power user, kind of knows what they're already looking for.
Right.
They want to go in and get data, show the pie chart of how they're doing, and then split that to other listing, you know, against listing sites or pivot to, you know, comparing years against each other. So we provide all of that in-house. It's kind of like pricing as well. We have a lot of pricing tools, but not things where you hit a lever and it just kind of smartly does everything for you. If you know what you're looking for, you have some good ideas already about pricing, some pricing models, we probably have everything you need to put that in place, like sliding last minute discounts, early bird. We just finished a big promo suite with Vrbo and Airbnb. Airbnb was for Vrbo more recently around like their one key promotions. If you're a one key member on Expedia or I'm on a mobile smartphone and you go to book on Expedia, you'll be like, hey, you're on mobile, have a mobile discount. You know, I guess they're, you know, the attraction there is a younger audience, though everybody's on a smartphone now.
Yeah.
But those kind of, you know, automating discounts, promos, deep diving into pricing and things like that, comparing history. We do all that really well. But there's, you know, like I said, I think some aspects of that are for the person who kind of goes, you know what, I know what I need, high and low seasons. And here's, you know, nightly prices on different kinds of times of the week and spreading things out. So, yeah. And I think really some of the tools that are out there, it's one of those things where you need to, and I don't know, you know, how you would look at this. I'd be kind of curious, you know, pushing it back to you. I think a lot of owners or PMs need to kind of simplify to knowing what they're looking for to begin with. So instead of going, give me a tool that will just do things for me. Yep. You know, there's a bunch of, you know, acronyms out here. Give me those acronyms, ADR, ADG, whatever, put them all together and just tell me my picture. You know, first kind of sit down and simplify to what is it you're looking for? What is it you want to know? And get that first in your head. Ask yourself, you know, I mean, it could be as basic as, you know, which channels or OTAs are sending me more bookings than others and what times of the year, which ones do better last minute, you know, which ones have more problems, have higher cancellation rates, you know, ask very simple settings or very simple questions to get to your reports or settings that might help you either answer those or solve them. I don't know. How do you see that? I mean,
I 100% agree. This is something I talk a lot about when we're analyzing properties. Let's say I'm going to go buy a property, but it's applicable exactly what you're talking about is you should understand what you're trying to look for, what picture you're trying to paint, the metrics you're trying to that are important to you. Like when I analyze properties, I go on AirDNA. There's a lot of data on there. I use Price Labs and AirDNA, pulls all kinds of data from there, but I don't use it right off the shelf because I know exactly what I want to look at. I pull it out, I put it in my own spreadsheet and it paints the picture for me. So I think it's really important to go in with the right, you know, very much like the right business plan, but it, you know, kind of is like, I need to have my plan. And then I need to use, because if I have my plan correctly, I know what tools and how to utilize those tools to execute the plan, right? And because you can go out and have the best tools in the world. If you don't know what you're trying to look for, you don't know what you want to use it for. Most of these tools are so robust anymore that you're almost none of us are using 100% of what's available in these tools, and owner res included probably, right? And it's like, hey, 100%. I want to know how I want to run my business. I want to know what's important. I want to know what I need to be able to do. And then I want to go find the tool that can help me execute it. And I think it's super critical to be able to start with that end in mind of what you really want to do, because, you know, you can, the best tool might be, you know, one thing and for somebody, but the best tool for somebody else might be something completely different based on what their end result or end goal is.
Yeah, 100%. Sometimes it's, you know, you're trying to do better than the previous year or the previous month. Sometimes you're realizing that, you know, maximizing your revenue and price is less important than maximizing your occupancy.
Yeah.
And so you need to go the opposite way, not really the opposite way in terms of total revenue, but the opposite way in terms of thinking about how we get, you know, more frequent, or sometimes you have a reputation problem. And so you're looking to rebuild a little bit. And so you want to get more people in, you want to offer a lot more deals, work with people and kind of build up that reputation side a little bit.
Yeah. We have very specific phases in properties, and we put them in these phases, and our goal is different in each of the phases, you know, in that it, like for a launch phase, for example, we're trying to get some traction. We're trying to get people through our property. We're trying to get feedback. We're trying to get those reviews. We're trying to show the algorithm that, hey, listen, we convert on your platform, right? All those different things that we're trying to do. We're not necessarily trying to maximize revenue during that phase, right? There's a lot of other things we're doing during the launch phase besides maximizing revenue. You know, then we roll into other phases when the primary goal is to maximize revenue. And we're going to do things a little bit different at that stage based on the data and the feedback we got in the launch phase, right? And so, yeah, you can change throughout that as you're depending on what phase you end up being in. And so it's, like you, I think that, you know, we look at data all the time. We look at feedback all the time, and we're trying to figure out the best way to, you know, run this business and do our things, right? We make a million mistakes along the way and we just kind of iterate along the way. But I remember, as we're talking about this, I was thinking about this a couple of years ago. We were talking about maximizing these assets, and we're looking at shoulder seasons versus peak seasons. And we came to the conclusion where a lot of people is like, how do you get extra business in the shoulder season when, and you'll really fill your calendar, because everybody can fill their calendar in the peak season. How do we get more money during the shoulder season? What we really realized was the way to maximize our total revenue throughout the year was figure out how to make more money during the peak season when everybody was spending money. And, you know, for a long time, I was focused on how do I maximize this shoulder season? Well, nobody was really spending a lot of money during that time. We started to realize, looking at the data and looking at all these different things, we're like, oh man, we're looking at the wrong thing. We need to be figuring out how do we make more money when everybody's spending money. And that, when we started looking at that and realizing that, we're like, okay, now we know what the end goal is. We can figure out how to do that. And from then on, that's been 2 or 3 years ago, we've always said, you know, you make your money in the peak season. You know, the shoulder season is just kind of there, and we deal with it. Usually that's when we do all of our maintenance and everything, but we really try to make our money during that peak season, where a lot of people think, well, I'm already making money during the peak season. Well, you might not be making the maximum amount of money. You might not be, you know, maximizing that asset, because you might not even know that. You might just think, well, it's already booked. It's 80% booked. It's like, well, push prices, let's push some other things, right?
Yeah. The psychology of all of it is interesting. It's been fun. I mean, obviously I've been on the owner res side for a long time now, for, you know, 10 years. I've kind of stepped away from the SDR management side, except, you know, just kind of tangentially being attached and being around for advice and, you know, being there, owning some properties and whatnot, but I've largely been on the owner res side. But it is interesting watching the psychology of PMs and owners and guests over time as they go through these cycles. One of the big things that is different about Chris and I and our culture and team is how much we talk about happiness, creating happiness. And this is largely with our customers, our software customers. But that's the other thing I wonder a lot. It's hard to measure, but what is the happiness factor of owners and PMs who get into this and want to drive towards scaling, who've done master classes and done all this stuff to stack and whatnot and be bigger and be better? And I always wonder, you know, is that making you happier? And so it's kind of to your point about, you know what you want. Also know yourself. You know, are you somebody, some of us thrive on, you know, wanting more, having a high idle state. Some of us don't. And sometimes realizing I could take on five more properties, but I don't have cleaners for five more properties,
is
going to be a problem. And also your strategy around what to do on Christmas morning when everyone's in the cabin and your front desk operation or your VA or your AI or whatever is suddenly not working and you have to step in. Know what you want. And it's difficult in this industry because it's not something they tell you when you start out with that one cabin on the river, right?
Yep, exactly.
You don't have that early on. With a hotel or something else, you have a front desk operation, you have, more scalability kind of baked in, or at least a traditional business operation. I think you kind of see more of what you're going to run into early on. I don't think STRs, I think, don't largely see what's going to happen when you go from 1 to 20.
Or even from 0 to 1. I think that I don't know any other kind of coach out there like we are that I believe most people should not manage their own properties. And for one of the things you hit on, and I don't manage my own properties. I always tell people, the tools are there. The systems are in place. You can tap into OwnRes. You can save money. You can do all this stuff. Do you want to do that? Does that fit into your lifestyle? Are you going to be a good host? You're walking into running a little business, even with the best tools and even with the best processes and automations and everything else, you're still running the business. And are you set up to do that? Is it going to make you happy to be a hospitality and a host? Because your guests are going to feel that. And so I'm not set up to be a good host. And so I hire good hosts. I say, listen, I have the number one property in multiple different markets and number one revenue property. I could never have that without having a really number one host. And so I know what I'm good at. I know what other people are good at, and I'm going to hire those people to do that for us. And I suggest people think about that on the front end, because a lot of people, they just immediately say, no, you just self-manage, because when you look at my pro forma, I've got 20 or 30% management fee in there, and it doesn't look nearly as good if I have that removed and then just keep that to myself. Right. And so I believe the reality of it is not everybody's cut out for it. And you can be a really good owner and a really good investor and love these properties, use them with your friends and family, and have somebody else manage them, because there's other people out there that are really good at it. And especially with the tools available now, like an OwnRes that they can tap into, they can be amazing hosts and they love it and they're good at it.
Yeah, that's a super important detail there. Knowing whether or not you are in fact a good host. I like that. I've known people who are clamoring to do it. Clamoring to take their properties away from a PM, and everything in their past, everything about their personality is screaming, this is not for you.
No.
And there's no way, depending on the personality, there's no real way to drive that point home sometimes, but it's an excellent point. And the other thing is, you talked about, the 20% for management or co-hosting or whatever, but you can also comfortably and happily scale that then, because
exactly.
Part that you don't like, the cleaning, the management, some of the interaction that might frustrate you is taken care of. So you can factor those numbers in and do what your smaller operators simply cannot do, frustrated as they are.
Yeah, so. 100%. Awesome, Paul. Well, listen, I could keep talking your ear off. But I am curious on one last question, just kind of as you've watched this industry grow up. You've been knee deep in it for a long time now, and really a big part of helping hosts really become better, raise the bar across the board. And it's been awesome to see what's going on at OwnRes, and I know within our Vodacy group, they love the tools. You mentioned AI. You mentioned kind of forward looking, saying, "Hey, listen, AI is going to be a big part of this stuff." Are there things that you see in the future? Like, we've had a rapid expansion of growth in this space over the last decade, right? I mean, it's been crazy fast. Do you think it's going to keep going that fast? Are they going to keep getting better? Are things going to keep going moving at that pace? Are the things that are going to become obsolete? Are there, like, what is your forward looking look as far as investors and operators in this space and the tools available to them?
Yeah, so that's a good question with kind of a couple different sides of it. I hear different answers depending on how I think about it. I think from the technology and software business side of it, you're going to see a consolidation quite a bit. Already, I think you're seeing that. I think I don't think it's necessarily that PMSs like us or channel managers are looking to just consume more and take more business. But there's a reality to, like I said earlier, AI and automation and how well they work if you don't own the data and you're just kind of plugging in with partners and stapling this on and doing the other. So I think those that are concerned about that and working future oriented around that are starting to build a little bit more in-house. I don't think, you know, all the tools are going to disappear. I think the real good ones, you mentioned Price Labs, and we highly recommend Price Labs. Like Wheelhouse is another one. I hate to mention one or two because we have 8 or 10 in that space that integrate with us. But there are ones that have you kind of single out as being super good. A lot of good data science behind them. They work super well. You know, there's not really a whole lot of reason to just start building that all in-house unless you've got some sort of, you know, private equity mothership who's just kind of commanding you to do this and that. But there are some things like messaging and AI where it's difficult to separate those pieces. So I do think you're going to see some of the tool sets and things around the edges start to either fold or be merged or just start to be built out more in some PMSs. We've had to make a couple of decisions like that. Again, not to try and own more of the market, just to give our customers, our PMs and hosts and owners, you know, something that's more purpose-driven along the same path and has the same speed and the same reliability kind of around the same product segments that are there now. So I do think there's consolidation coming. Some of that's also just the nature of as this past 5-8 year expansion piece happened, right before COVID, through COVID, just kind of accelerating through that time period, there were a lot of tools built with a lot of good intentions. That I think probably struggled to find profitability and really find a strong market. And so I think some of those are also starting to see that, you know, that there needs to be kind of an off-ramp or exit somewhere. So you have consolidation happening like that too. I know some stories that are coming to mind. On the STR, you know, the ownership, vacation rental, you know, industry side, I don't think it's going to slow down a whole lot, but I do think you're seeing some consolidation there too. Yeah. The consolidation there is interesting, though, because it's, you know, we saw a big wave of owners coming away from PMs, from the traditional PMs of 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You saw a ton of these, the term host coming out of Airbnb, the host and the co-host model. But then I think as a lot of these owners started taking over and they took over their one property, took it away from a PM, maybe a second property, built a third, they started realizing all of the things we've been talking about for the last half hour. And realized, oh, I really do need the co-host to take away some of those other factors. And so they've either returned to the PM or they've brought on tools to try and help them behave a little bit more like a PM. Some of them have tried to scale out to 15 or 20 just so they could get a front desk operation going and kind of become their own PM. In some cases, the co-host market has worked really well too. People who are just professional co-hosts, you're still the owner, you're still the one operating, but let's join forces and I'll you know, be in the office all day, kind of being the VA and co-hosting and providing that shine. So there's some kind of consolidation going on there too. And I don't really have my finger on how much is going toward the co-host market. But I think that, you know, people fundamentally like property. They like owning property and they like being hospitable. Even the ones who aren't good at it, I think there's a philosophical thing we do where we like to be hospitable. We like to host. I don't know how many people over the years whose parties I've been to who think they're good hosts and they're not, but they still want to keep hosting. Just, you know, the local Christmas party or whatever. So I don't think it's going to stop. I think that, you know, the fact that it became a good, you know, financial market for people just kind of helped them do what they kind of wanted to do already back in the day. So, I don't see that slowing down a whole lot other than maybe a little bit of a recover from the COVID bounce.
Yeah, I totally agree. I appreciate the insights there. And yeah, and on the specifically on the market side, yeah, you're right. People like these properties. It's fun to own. You know, they're fun properties to own. You know, if you can make some money with them and they become good investments as well, that's like that, you know, that's like an extra reason to justify us buying a vacation home, right? Our cabin on the lake or cabin on the river that you bought. Mine was on the lake, the first one. And it gives us a reason to do that. So they're fun to own. And then on the flip side of that, the consumer has already voted with their pocketbook saying, hey, listen, we like this accommodation choice. We like this as an option on the hospitality side. And so, you know, when you put those two together, it seems to be a pretty good recipe for things moving forward and continuing to move forward. I don't think we're going to see that, you know, that COVID spike that we had, but you know, it's kind of become a mainstream mature asset class. And I think it's going to stay there for a little while because It's attractive on the investor side for the mom and pop investor. The average American can buy single family homes, vacation homes. And we're like, hey, listen, now we can do something with them and make a little bit of money. And then on the flip side, the consumers like it and we like to stay in them. So awesome, Paul. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time today. It's been awesome. Where can we point people to go check out more about OwnerRes and everything you guys have going on?
Yeah, so ownerres.com is of course the homepage, but drilling in there, we're real proud of our community. So look at our forums. If you just right there in the menu, look at also our blog. We have a really rich, active blog about not just what we have going on, our product updates coming out, but just webinars and stuff. We profile our users a lot. There's a regular user profile every week.
Love it.
Industry news and stuff. Our team that handles that just does a great, great job. It's one of those things where it pops up. I've been seeing it for years, of course, and before it was even there, and I still look forward to reading it. And so, a lot of good stuff there. Whatever questions you have, reach out, and we love talking to people.
Love it. Well, we appreciate everything you guys are doing for the industry, helping everybody raise the bar. It's awesome, and it's good for everybody to kind of join forces and just continue to push that ball forward and get better and better every day. You guys are doing a great job at that at OwnerRes. Those of you that are listening, we always post those links in the show notes. So if you forget any of that, we're going to make sure to go down the show notes and you just click on it and an easy button to get to the path there and go check out those blogs and community and all those different resources. And that's what it's about here at Bodice. And the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast, our goal is to help you guys walk into this game with your eyes wide open. And so these are additional resources to help you do that. So, Paul, I appreciate it. Those of you that are listening, we know how valuable your time is. We appreciate you spending it with us today. If you got any value out of this show, you guys know I don't run any ads or sponsorships, never have. Don't plan on anytime soon. We'd like to talk about what we want to talk about and promote what we want to promote. And so the only way the show grows is if you guys share it. And if you have more than 30 seconds, like it, leave us a review on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the final most important thing I ask you guys at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
For joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Bodice.com. Thanks for listening and we'll see you on the next episode.